to a special episode of Pit Lane Parlay. Today we are recording our Formula One episode with the Stick to F1 podcast, hosted by Jason Martinez and Anthony Mingioni, both from Philly. Jason was on here, I think, right before the F1 season started. I don't really remember.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Doing great, man.
Fantastic.
Matthew?
I'm good. I'm glad we got two people here that are more about around my age and less around your age. Because it doesn't look like they're approaching Medicare age quite yet, unlike you, so.
Oh, God. We didn't even
looks are deceiving.
Yeah, I was going to say looks are clearly deceiving.
Don't tell us that.
That's the most
I'm not over 50, brother.
And I'm 44, so.
How do you look all, you know, nice, and then we got the host up there just looking angelic and I don't even know.
Man, we're not even a minute in and I've already been dumped on, but welcome, Jason, Anthony. This is the running joke that I am the oldest man alive in the history of podcasting, apparently. Guys, for those who want to check out their show, it's the Twitter is at Stick, the number 2, F1. Check it out. It's really good. So I'm curious, before we start talking about everything going on, I know you guys are both in the hockey media world. That's how I know you before today. And Jason and I talked about Drive to Survive a couple months ago. Anthony, how did you get in? How long have you been into the racing world? And then how did Stick to F1 come up? And I like the play on the hockey podcast name, by the way.
We were coming up with all kinds of interesting. We almost had five lights at one point, but that was obviously taken, right, Jace? There was a few others we kind of bounced around, and then we just came with Stick to F1, and it was kind of a, you know, Jason had used that prior with a hockey podcast as well for Stick to Hockey. And yes, I've actually tripped over myself and accidentally said Stick to Hockey on a recording. But for me, probably in the racing, probably would be my grandfather. He was really, he enjoyed being Italian American, everything. The Andretti's obviously were for them. You got to watch Mario. You got to watch the Andretti's. So as a kid, I used to watch, and I would always, you know, jump in on that and watch certainly the Indianapolis 500. Was probably a little too young in terms of F1 because of the fact it was early and I was busy watching Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah.
But for me, F1, I've always had, you know, fascination with it. I think probably for me was, you know, I'm probably think around 99 or so, I really started and I really gravitated towards the Hakkinen Schumacher duel. Watching them, and I really like Mika Hakkinen. I was a big fan, and I like Schumi as well. It was just fun to watch the two of them just battling each other. And watched it for about four years or so, and I kind of lapsed off of it a little bit. I kind of came back to it right around the time of the 2000. About five years ago, the big duel between Rosberg and Hamilton.
It's not a bad year.
That was a good year to kind of jump. 2016 kind of jumped in right around that point for me, and it was a hell. I mean, recording the races and everything, and just watching the Abu Dhabi race and watching Lewis just backing up, getting almost frustrated at Lewis, but understanding the strategy there and everything, and then. Part of me is kind of, with Mercedes' dominance the last, however many seasons now since then, it's been, I've always had a fascination with the midfield fights, always. Watching McLaren's dip in fortune and then resurgence, obviously, within the last couple of years, coinciding with Lando joining. Drive to Survive, I did not start watching until this summer. It was almost like a weird sort of thing where I just did not watch it. It was kind of, it wasn't a principle. I don't know. I'm always late on things. I just am. Stuff that everybody else.
I watched the season last week.
Yeah.
I just found out that Nico won.
Exactly. And I kind of went in reverse order. I started with the most recent season three, and then it bounced me to season one, and then I, maybe a couple weeks ago, I finished up on season two. So I'm fully caught up on that. But, you know, I my brother always laughs and elbows me and says, you know, you always make a big deal about the fact you didn't watch Drive to Survive. And it's like, and my brother's big gearhead. My brother's, you know, he worked, you know, he loves cars. My brother Joey, and he found it fascinating that I was interested in it. I was kind of low key about it and got much more into it in the last few years. So he's been kind of in my ear about it as well. But that's kind of how, again, the last few, certainly I would say probably since 16, low key. And then Jason and I kind of, it was a weird thing. Jason and I just kind of fell into a conversation about it. I don't know where it happened. Maybe a little after, maybe last year, Jace, that we discovered that the two of us were in the Formula One, that we're actually, we're both looking in the Formula One.
Yeah, probably around there. Around that time. Happened. Because all of a sudden I saw this stick to F1 is following the Pit Lane Parlay account. I usually ignore when we get new followers, and then I saw one of you guys retweeted, like, new episode, and it took me, like, a couple minutes to put two and two together that it was you guys actually making the episode before
it's
I
the
was
age
like,
thing again.
Yeah, thank you. Takes him a while. Yeah, listen, whatever. I wish I had known this many years ago when we were at Trent Titans games and there was, you know, eight people in the stands and I didn't really have too many other people to talk to, but I guess we'll dive right into it. The first news we'll get through real quick here. Spa-Francorchamps CEO was killed in a murder-suicide, which is crazy and very sad. I'm not going to try to mispronounce her last name.
Maye, I think it's pronounced the L, especially with the being Belgian. Yeah. I think it's pronounced Maye.
See, that's why we have people smarter than me on, because I definitely would have butchered that one. So hopefully her family is doing well as they can, and hopefully Spa has some nice tribute for her in just a little over or a little under 2 weeks at this point.
It's so strange too as well, Mike. It's just we've had incidents now in the last few years that have happened related, and this isn't related to on the track, but now you know, you go back to obviously what happened a couple of years in 2019. With Jules Bianchi and everything, and it's a strange thing, and it just always, I love the track. I love Jason and I equally. Just Spa is just, there's something magical about Spa, especially Eau Rouge going into Radion, and it's just, you know, it's just a fantastic. But the last few years, there's just a pall over it. There's something going on that kind of overshadows. I'm thinking Hubert. I'm thinking of Bianchi years ago. I'm sorry, I'm going way back.
Yeah,
I'm getting my angles screwed up. Yeah,
such a brutal one too, right?
Yeah.
But like, I mean, that track is—it's like so spread out, right? And it's so fast. And how you come up over Eau Rouge and it's just blind into probably what is it? The second longest straight, probably on the circuit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking about blinding speeds, and yeah, you're right, though. But I love the track because so much of the track is always changing at elevation in very severe ways. Like, they're not, like, lightly graded rises or falls in elevation. They're very steep. So it's a very different track like that. And, you know, the bus stop chicane is just a signature element after all of that speed through, you know, the third sector three. It's just, it's crazy. And it's a great track. And there's overtaking opportunities. I can't wait for the race because I think it's one of those signature ones in the season. But, and you know, just from the way the race starts off the grid right into that, I mean, just a 90-degree elbow, you know, and then just everything that ensues after. I think it's just a real interesting kind of old-school track that's so European feeling to me. Like, Mike, you're a huge, you know, indie guy. Like, it's so not like North America racing, right?
Yeah, I mean, overseas, and I'm sure Matt agrees, it's in my top three. I think we did a top five track ranking not too long ago, but
yeah, I think the only one in North America that really compares is Road America.
Yeah, Road America definitely be the closest, but the one, but yeah, it's by far one of my favorite Formula One tracks. I did find it interesting, so I was kind of reading. So the what race was the crazy crash at a couple weeks ago? Is it WEC or that one? Did Jack Aiken? Yeah, Jack Aiken. So former, I should say former Williams driver. I think he might be Williams reserve driver. Jack Aiken was in sports car crash there. I want to say about a month ago and broke his collarbone. It was pretty gnarly. And he said something interesting about finding ways to make it safer, you know, after the Hubert incident and with the kind of craziness that's gone on there, the last couple accidents that have been up that way is not so much doing anything on the right side as you go up the hill and hit the straightaway, but actually make the left side a little bit more runoff, because if you hit that wall on the left side, you bounce right back into the middle of the track. So I thought that was something pretty interesting by Jack that I hadn't thought of before. So I'll let Matt go first here. Matt, good idea or bad idea, and then we'll everybody will get a chance on this one.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if that's the right answer. I think maybe, in my opinion, because to my knowledge, currently the track layout right there, it's a tire wall on the left side. So if you hit a tire wall at a certain angle, it is going to fling you in the opposite direction. So I think, I don't know, you know, how much money in reserve Spa-Francorchamps has, or just kind of what technology they usually use over there, but I think like a safer barrier would almost work better if you just hit the wall and then kind of keep going at the same trajectory straight instead of being flung back into the track. I think kind of jumping to making more runoff, I think, is a kind of hasty solution, because even if there's a lot more runoff there, and I don't know geographically if that would work with the surrounding, if there's like a hill or I don't know what's going
on. It's in a hill, yeah. I don't know if that would work.
I don't know if it would work, but there's still a potential, even if there is a tire wall over there, that even if there is more runoff, you could still get flung back over. So I would look more at the actual wall itself than making more runoff.
Yeah, I don't know that you could do more runoff. I mean, I guess you could to some extent, but it is built in an embankment. Like, you see so many, you know, camera angles off the embankment, and people are sitting on that hill. So I just don't
know. There's like a house there or something, isn't there?
Yeah. That's the weird thing about that track. It's like so Belgium, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, somebody's chateau is up there, you know, like a hot tub on the deck, the whole thing. And, but, yeah, I don't know if you could do that. Maybe, I mean, to some extent you could. Would it be, if you're talking about runoff in that area, it's got to be significant, right? And I don't know that there's that much. But you do have to find a way, because everything filters right back into the track. Even if you go off on the right, it's the same thing. You get pushed out. There's too much speed to not end up back in the track in any way, shape, or form, unless you, and you can't build off more runoff on the right either, because it falls away. So I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah,
other than straightening it out a little bit, which I don't think we want to see.
No, that's the unique part about that, you know, it's just the trajectory that you're going up, the speed. I mean, Fernando Alonso described it as just being like, it literally is like climbing it feels like you're climbing like a 12-story skyscraper, you know, it's that kind of elevation that's kind of almost under, and you have to be at that velocity to pull.
When you get to the top, it's going to feel like you're just floating.
Right. You see, literally, as you're going up, you just see sky.
Yeah,
that's a description that he's given, Fernando Alonso. He's like, you're just seeing sky. That's
usually what I see when I game as well, because I never can handle that corner right, and I end up straight into the wall.
I can't wait for you to be in our league.
We have an Xbox gaming league, and this is my first. I've been in the PlayStation League until this year, and I think most tracks I might be half decent on, but Spa, I don't know why in F1, especially in the new game, I really suck. I mean, I'm just awful.
The tire models,
I'm gonna write that one down. Half decent.
The tire models were something you had to get used to, I think, this year. I know I had to.
Yeah. Corners that you used to think were flat out are not flat out anymore. Like, I found that out in comps real quick.
Oh yeah.
And the same thing. I mean, I've done that just, you know, from the grid. And just spun right into the pit lane around turn one. I'm going, why am I facing the wrong way in the pit lane now? But it is different, and the curbs are so much different, so you have to take them differently. But Yeah, that's one that it took me a while to be able to run that flat out.
Yeah, I'm still not there, but I've only done it once or twice. I need to.
Yeah, you got to sit down for like a good couple hour session.
It's gotta be. It's all muscle. It's like a driver. It becomes. It's muscle memory, and if you got to have the time to do it, and it's not. I find isolated time to do it here and there, but it's like.
Yeah, you find like 3 days. You go, okay, for the next 3 days, I'm going to spend at least an hour a day on this track and just GT it and just run time trials. Like I did it with Mexico and Spain, and I hated Spain before. But I'm like, I watched a couple of videos, and I'm like, you know, this is not that complicated. But hitting your marks on that track without having the curb spin you out is hell and high water. So yeah, I just spent like 3 or 4 days, and by the end of it, I knocked off 4.5 seconds off my time.
Wow.
But getting back to Spa, it's just, there is that feeling like it's just, as you're trying to make that climb, and you're even in the game, there is a palpable feeling of just like, holy crap, how do these guys keep this thing under control? You feel like...
You feel the loss of downforce and the loss of gravity.
Yes.
And that's, I can't imagine what it feels like in a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going 200 miles an hour and coming up over that crest, and you already have to be mid-turn when you're coming over. So I can't imagine what that feels like. It's got to be just unbelievable.
That's why we get to sit here and talk about the video game, and they get to actually do it and make a buttload of money.
Yeah, so to make a buttload of money.
I can't wait for the race, though. Like, this summer break, Mike, I mean, it's been... I was so looking forward to this season and the month off, and like the season's been so good. Like, find me a clunker that's happened. I was thinking the other day, I'm going, okay, 11 races. I don't even know how I'd rank them. I don't. It was the best one Hungary because you had, you know, a maiden win for a guy and all the circumstance that happened. Maybe. I don't know. But, like, Baku was insane. Like, some of these races have been so good. I'm just... like chomping at the bit, not to mention coming back, and you're coming back to, you know, from the break with Spa.
Spa and Monza and something else.
Maybe. And then you got Zandvoort. You get this just crazy, Zandvoort, yep. Just three different races in a row, three different, completely different setups that you have to have.
And what are the teams coming back from the break like? That, you know, we don't know. You know, who's bringing new bits and upgrades? You know, Mercedes might have a few more. Ferrari's going to have some, and you know, Aston Martin and Alpine. What are they going to do to their cars the rest of the way? When are they going to turn to 2022? I don't know. It's going to be fascinating.
Something.
How many businesses has Lance Stroll bought in the? Or, I'm sorry, Lawrence Stroll. How many businesses has Lawrence Stroll bought in the break?
Yeah, probably at least three. He's like an intimidating guy when he comes like strolling with that white hair. You know.
Yeah.
Pun intended, or.
Yeah. Fully. Yeah. I mean, even just watching him on the latest season of Drive to Survive, like, not many people can intimidate you on a TV screen, but watching him walk, and he says something like, you'll go there, and I was like, okay, and then I realized it's like the TV, and I mean, he's like, being in his presence would probably be incredibly intimidating.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be fascinating the rest of the season. I think it's like it's on a tee to just be off the charts great. So we'll see what happens, but you know, everything we've seen in the first 11 races has been so fascinating, and the fact that Max and Red Bull have the better car, but have suffered far greater pain by bad luck than Lewis has and Mercedes through. Mistakes is fascinating that they're, you know, Mercedes is leading the driver right standings and the constructors right now. So it's what's going to happen? Who the hell knows? Who knows how many races there's going to be at this point?
Yeah. We had Suzuka canceled today. We're already down to 21 of 23 right now. And then I was reading, well, maybe it'll be a doubleheader at COTA down in Texas, and now that's looking unlikely because of new travel restrictions in Travis County, which is where Circuit of the Americas is, down in Austin, Texas. So I don't know.
Mexico is in peril, apparently. Same with Brazil.
Yeah, Mexico and Brazil. I would be okay with doing, like, so let's say we get down to 19 out of the original plan 23. let's just do four at the secure outer loop. Let's just go balls to the wall.
He doesn't want that. I can tell you that. No, he does not want that.
Yeah, nobody else. None of the drivers. Maybe the drivers would want, like, one or two, but, like, four, like, yeah, I know I'm asking for a lot on that one.
Well, I mean, there's some things you can do. You can go back to Mugello. You can go. There's some other places you can go back to. And looking at the calendar, like, they're in Saudi Arabia at Jeddah. And that open week, I guess it's in November. Yeah, you could probably do secure in there. Or just go back and do another race in the regular Bahrain circuit. I don't know. What's wrong with that? You know what I mean? It kicked off the season. Do another one late in the season. And if you want to do two there, then do the regular, you know, Grand Prix circuit and do the outer loop again, the secure Grand Prix. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I would be too. If that's
Red Bull would be a monster, by the way, on the outer loop this year.
Yeah.
Well, with their straight line speed this year, they'd be unreal on that track.
I mean, selfishly, I think if Marion County doesn't have any restrictions, they could always just do the race in Indianapolis. I think it's still got its grade one.
It does. That track confirmed last week.
So,
I think that's unlikely at this point because of
all the logistics. Well, I know it's incredibly unlikely, yeah. But yeah, I just think the idea of...
Be awesome though.
Like, doing a doubleheader somewhere seems like a cop out to me. I just think it's kind of a.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
Hi, listeners. We wanted to take a moment to tell you about another podcast from Evergreen Podcasts and Sound Talent Media called Pit Lane Parlay. Pit Lane Parlay is the go-to podcast for IndyCar and motorsports-related news. Each episode, we discuss things like our favorite drivers, news clips from the last week, and generally giving each other a hard time about predictions we've made in the past and or life stories that have come up recently. We really have a lot of fun with it and really enjoy each other's company, and we hope you can come join us too. Join Pit Lane Parlay by following us on your favorite podcast today.
Not a lame idea. I think Bahrain would be cool just because there's so much time between race one and race two versus just doing like two races at COTA back to back. Just I don't necessarily get the vibe from those.
So my quadruple header is not a good idea.
Well, that would be kind of fun just because that would be complete anarchy for 4 weeks in a row.
Well, it's only two in a row at Austria, and it was dominated by Red Bull on both of them.
Yeah, and that's like 50 points to Max, which I feel like kind of inflates it a little.
But think about last year. They did back to back at Silverstone last year. They did the British Grand Prix, then they did the 70th. Lewis literally drove the wheels off for the British Grand Prix. And then Max won the 70th. So,
the first one was good. The one where Lewis lost his wheel, that was a good race. The second one where Max won wasn't as good. Like, and I think the same thing with Austria. Not so much this year, but last year when they did the double. Like, the first one, Austria, the first one last year was bonkers. Yeah. And the second one, not as much. And same thing with Silverstone. This year, both the Austria races were actually pretty decent. They were okay.
Shocker for me this season that ended up being good was Paul Ricard delivered an actual real race this year.
Yeah.
Jason and I were stunned watching that race and going, I guess it is capable of having a good race.
Yeah, that was Road America weekend. I was kind of bummed.
But that's the thing, though. Like, no matter where they race this year, it's going to be good. It's because the cars are closer.
Yeah, I think I was looking at the schedule and you said that there wasn't a clunker on there. I think the only one that kind of, well, I mean, Monaco's Monaco. But,
yeah, exactly.
Spain, if I remember correctly, I think Spain was the greatest race in the world. But that's because Mike and I agree that Spain is the, not counting Monaco, is the second worst venue on the calendar besides Sochi.
Why is everybody? I mean, like, so cheap to me. Why is it such a crap track? Because it's got like every element. It's got high speed corners, low speed corners. It's got a great long straight DRS zone that starts off sector three. Like, I don't know why it's so bad, but it just hasn't produced any good races. I guarantee this. Mark this down. Mark this on the tape, like they used to say back in the day. Sochi will deliver a good race this year.
Now that they're heading to St. Petersburg in two.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It just doesn't flow. You know, it's just missing the it factor. Whether it's in the middle of the Olympic Village and they kind of just...
It's designed around it. It is what it is. It's designed.
You know why it lacks? It hasn't seen a good race.
Right. Mercedes
has dominated everything.
Exactly. And I think if you got a more competitive race, since it's come back, it'd be a different story. It might get the same. Like Paul Ricard, even just has that sort of had that rep for a few times
hadn't saw a good race.
That's a good race.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the two moments associated to stick out. Out of what, the 9 years they've done it or whatever? The two that stick out is Raikkonen hitting Bottas with a few laps to go when Bottas is still at Williams. And then it was Kvyat's last race with Red Bull where he hit Vettel twice in the span of 500 yards.
I like when Kvyat hit Vettel at China.
Yeah.
It just came... He called him, what do you call him, the torpedo?
Yeah. The torpedo!
Yeah, that's where it was born.
He came in like a torpedo.
Came buzzing up the inside. It was like, dude, there's
is that the race where he confronted him at the green room or whatever?
It was in the room. That's
like,
well,
I got the position, so...
It was there. Like, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to lift?
Yeah.
I'm a race car driver. I don't lift. Kvyat might be back, though.
Where?
There's a conversation about Williams.
No. I have not seen that. Hang on a second.
I've heard some.
He's a little further down. He's a further down the list. Either that, or if let's say Mick, because that's not nailed down yet. That's still not nailed down yet. I could easily see Mick. He was in Alfa Romeo's. He'd kind of floated in and around there. I know Lawrence Barotto had mentioned Kvyat as an option for Williams, and it's been discussed. But yeah, if you had, I would love to watch Kvyat and Mazepin.
Oh my god!
Says our buddy George tweeted on July 30th of 2016, Kvyat to IndyCar. This guy's needs out of F1 # German Grand Prix. I unfortunately don't remember what he did during the 2016 German Grand Prix, but our buddy George is the first pop-up that I got when I typed in Kvyat IndyCar on Twitter.
That's pretty funny. Thanks, George.
Thanks,
you
George.
Hit latest. You're looking at top tweets. You got to look at the latest. With Grosjean finishing P2 last week in India, there's going to be this rush to get every F1 driver that doesn't have a seat over to Indy now. So Albon was, of course, at the race last week, and
yeah, I do have to say. Shannon and I bumped into Albon. We were actually walking around where the NASCAR garages were to find IndyCar. And we were trying to avoid some people and went a different way and then bumped into Albon and his manager, who, by the way, that man needs to wear some sunscreen because he was as red as my shirt after one day. But so I went to Alex and said, hey, man, do you have 5 minutes, 3 minutes just to chat? And he was like, yeah, super nice dude. You know, some of these F1 guys come over and they're very quiet, like Christian Lundgaard. Like he came off a little Alex Rossi. When Alex Rossi first came over, like, quiet, super cocky, didn't know if he really wanted to be here. Mm-hmm. Albon came over, and he was chatty, and he chatted with literally everyone in every series, and stopped to sign and talk to fans, and I was very impressed, because I was hoping to run into him like I did, and I didn't expect to actually get a little bit of a conversation out of it, so it was good to chat with him and see how friendly he is, and I don't know if Matt has anything on
recreating cops.
I'm still researching Kvyat to IndyCar. A disgruntled fan who, as Jimmy Johnson so lovingly put to us, doesn't care what these people think. This is in response to Johnson causing a red flag in practice at Nashville. Person commented, rinse, repeat, give him out of IndyCar and give that seat to Danny Kvyat or Nico Hulkenberg or any other F1 driver who's available.
Well, Hulkenberg,
yes, I would definitely trust Danny Kvyat to not bring out a red flag into IndyCar. 100%.
Could you imagine him at, like, could you imagine him driving around the streets in Nashville?
I don't want to imagine him anywhere above 180 miles an hour, anywhere.
Well, it's funny because, like, people, because Roman came in second last week, that, oh, you know, they disrespected him at F1. I mean, that dude, and he had one of the most horrific crashes last year at Bahrain, but that dude had more flat one, turn one, two, or three accidents than anybody I've ever seen. Like he was constantly playing bumper cars.
2012, it was like four or five at least in one season, wasn't it?
Is that when he got the race ban?
Yeah, because of Spa. So I know in like the first race Australia, he got
14 in Spa when he flipped over Alonso.
No, that was 12, because that was Hamilton's last year with
McLaren. Oh, you're right, you're right. Yeah.
Because, yeah, both the Saubers were involved, which is sad. Maldonado jumped the start. That whole sequence was just horrendous.
He was always just kind of boneheaded, you know, breakdowns of thought. And things going into areas and just creating too much contact, and they were significant crashes. He would just take guys out every week.
And he was also
seems like a nice enough guy and everything.
And Jason, I think he was also the Drivers Association president.
Yes.
Boot, and it's like, good example there, dude.
Yeah, it's crazy to see how far he's come. Now he's competitive and one of the nicest dudes I've ever talked to, hands down.
Yeah.
So he's definitely worked hard to improve his racecraft. So we'll wrap it up with one final question here as we just approach the half-hour mark. Jason, you were the only other person other than me, I think, to predict Verstappen as the champion before the season started. So who is are you sticking with Verstappen as your season champion? We'll give Anthony a chance to make a pick here.
I think I picked that too, Mike, before preseason testing.
Yeah, I think I think we talked like 2 weeks before preseason testing.
Yeah, I'm definitely sticking by it because I think that two things. Number one, they've had the better car through the first 11 races, although Mercedes has closed the gap. I think that two things will be in play that will help him finish the job this year. Number one, I think Red Bull will allocate more in-season upgrades resources to dethroning Mercedes more so than Mercedes will do to protect this championship.
Yeah.
That's number one. And I think they're just starting off with a better race car. Not only that, but I think that Max is the better driver right now. He is so at the top of his game from a driving standpoint. And I think Lewis has been lucky in that some of the, Anthony and I talked about this on the last episode, that some of the mistakes that Lewis has made have not cost him nearly to the detriment that they should have. Like what happened at Imola when he put it into the gravel going on the outside in some wet conditions. And then what happens? Russell collides with Bottas, and then he gets off the hook. He's able to finish P2. But he should have been at the back of the field there and been trying to salvage a race. Didn't happen. Yep. So I think that, you know, still a lot's going to have to go right. And Red Bull right now, and Max in particular, has got to turn some luck around. He's got some bad luck. And whatever you feel about what happened at Copse at Silverstone, Max had a part in it because he wasn't backing off and Lewis wasn't either. How they come back after the break and decide to manage the season, we'll see who manages the season and who just throws balls away. You know, because I don't know that either guy's going to manage it. They're both going to be unrelenting because they're going to look at it as a sign of weakness of whoever lifts first. So I'll stick with the Max pick. I didn't know the car was going to be this good before preseason testing. I really didn't. And maybe I'm just willing it because I want a new champion. But I think he will finish the job and Lewis will end up finishing second. And not only that, but I think that as soon as they announce that George Russell's taking the seat from Bottas, you're going to have a guy not as motivated on that Mercedes team.
And that's a delicate balance, though, Chase.
On that Red Bull team to drive strategy.
Chase, I think it's they're in a very... I know they said they wanted to address this thing in the summer, and we're getting... The hour's getting late in terms of that, but there's still time.
I think there's pen to paper. There's been some reports that there's actually been pen to paper for George. It just hasn't been... They said there's just something
there's to compass around. They don't want to lose him completely, Bottas. You know? They want him, especially if you make that publicly. That could really kind of take the starch, and they're ahead. I do wonder if they were behind in the standings, if Max didn't have his run of luck at Silverstone and at the Hungaroring. I think we might have heard something already, but they have been very tight-lipped. They're ahead in the standings, and I think there is a sort of a delicate sort of balancing act that they're doing here, and we may or may not. This may be a case where they need to see season as it progresses along here, and it may be depending on wherever the standings are at that point. But to answer Mike's question, I was at the beginning of the season, I needed to see what, you know, I knew Max ended on a high last year at
Abu Dhabi, dominated Abu Dhabi,
and had great moments. And I felt pretty confident in him this season. That he was at the least what Jason and I had discussed, or you know, before the season started, was I just want to see a good competitive race. I want to see a competitive battle at the top. You know, we've had several years here where it's literally by the time we get late in the season, things are determined, and we're all focused in on the midfield, which is fine. And I love midfield fights. I genuinely love midfield fights. But you want to have an actual battle at the top of the chain. You do, and we've had that. And Max has impressed me. He really has, and I think had he not had a run of bad luck, he could very well be in the typical Lewis position of calling this. But I think he comes back. I think the break happens at the right time for him that allows him to sort of the intensity of it, especially after what happened. Those things happening on top of one another at the same time, and just having the opportunity here to kind of take a break, come back, and then begin to really lock it in here. At Spa. And again, he's got Zandvoort coming up as well, you know, Dutch Grand Prix for the first time in ages. So he's going to kind of feel it too, Max. And Max is going to have to control that. And that's something that, you know, Lewis could potentially use that over.
He's going to get booed.
He's going to get booed. And listen, you'll never get me to count out on Lewis Hamilton. He's had too many. He has the ability to
fight.
It's
like betting against Scott Dixon. It's just never a good thing to do.
Precisely, and I'm not betting against him. I think this is a race that goes late into the season, but I do think in the end, as long as Max limits Silverstone moments and things that he can control, the thing is, I look at Hungaroring as something he really could not control, whereas Cops was something that was kind of equal, more of an equal situation.
He's got to realize he's in the faster car, and he doesn't have to win lap one.
And he's never been in this spot, too.
Over the ring.
And Jason,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's not been in this spot either, too.
Yeah.
He's still young. He is 23. There is a maturity about him, though, that's different than a 23 to 24-year-old. And I think he's going to dominate the sport for a long time after Lewis, you know, when Lewis hangs him up.
The other fascinating part is Lando Norris, Charles Leclerc, and Sainz. Like those three guys.
And Danny.
Lando Norris has been so good this year. So good qualifying races. I mean, he had bad luck, obviously, at the Hungaroring as well. But Ferrari has been way better than I thought. And I guarantee there's some upgrades coming on that car. What they're going to be in this next part of the season is going to be fascinating, too. And in Monza, too, and Ferrari, if they're, you know, running good again, forget it. That's all. Having Ferrari run good at Monza is rare.
Yeah.
But it's awesome.
They didn't say, Chase, I know they didn't say when exactly. They didn't anticipate, I think, Bernardo said, I don't think they knew it wasn't going in immediately at Spa. Could they race to try to get it by Monza? Maybe, but I almost got the feeling that even then, it sounds like something that's going to happen after the next stretch of three races. But you never know. Monza would be like, you know, typical Italian flourish, da-da-da-da.
Yep. I agree. I think it'll be good. Anyway, gentlemen, I appreciate the time, and it's been fun chatting Formula One with other people who live near me, since there aren't too many Formula One fans in Philly, or at least it feels that way. So I appreciate the time, guys. Again, it's at Stick2F1, the Stick2F1 podcast. I appreciate the time. We'll have you guys back on again towards the end of the season. We'll do another one of these, and maybe it's
I'll gloat about Verstappen winning the Drivers' Championship.
Yes,
I'm sticking with Lewis.
Matt's sticking with Lewis. I'm sticking with Verstappen, like I picked in the preseason. But anyway, guys, thank you again for listening. There obviously is no F1 this week, but IndyCar's at Gateway, so make sure to tune in on that on Saturday night. And guys, have a lovely weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on.